Hello, everybody, and good afternoon, good morning, wherever you are dialing in from, and a very, very warm welcome to this third in our series on marketing leadership and delivering bravely in uncertain times. My name is Harriet De Sweet. I am Vice Chair of the Marketing Society in Southeast Asia, based in Singapore, where I'm, I'm talking to you from today, from my spare room at home. I'm also Managing Director for Brand Learning in Asia Pacific, and I'm very delighted and proud to be one of the facilitators on the Marketing Leadership Programme that we run in conjunction with the Marketing Society. And the third hat that I wear is that I'm also the Marketing Advisory Lead for Accenture for Southeast Asia. So here we are in our third series, and please don't worry, if this is the first one you've joined, that's absolutely fine. You've missed great stuff, but you can catch up, it's fine. So our third, the third in our series is all about deliver. It's all about, in series one, we looked at how do we create a really exciting vision for the future? How do we then, in the second our session, we looked at how do we then engage people in that exciting future and take people on a journey in order to do exactly what we're going to talk about today, which is all about delivery. How do we make sure that we can really drive for results for our teams, for our brands, for our organization, and indeed for ourselves as leaders. So just as with the previous two sessions, I guess a couple of housekeeping details. First of all, please use this afternoon or this morning as time for yourself. I've not spoken to anybody in the last 4 months who is bored or who is quiet or who has nothing to do. I'm very aware that everybody is very, very busy. So please do use this 1 hour just for yourself and a chance just to pause and stop the clock and think about yourself as a leader and as a marketing leader in these challenging times that we're in. You'll see in the chat function, so if you, some people are more familiar with Zoom, some people are more familiar with Teams, there's a chat function. Please post any questions in there at any point in time. We have got a Q&A session coming up towards the end of the session, but equally, if you'd like to ask questions as we go, that's absolutely fine. In terms of what we're going to cover off today, I'm going to hand over shortly to Russell and Annie, our leadership gurus, who are going to take you through some of the tools and some of the processes that we use on the Marketing Leaders Programme and give you a little bit of content to think about. I'm then going to welcome Moritz van der Linden to come and have a chat with me about some of the elements that Russell and Annie have described and some of the thinking approaches about how we can really focus on delivery and to reflect on his own leadership journey and how he's really driving for results, particularly at the moment. And then we'll open up for a bit of a panel discussion towards the end of the hour. We're going to finish, we will make sure that we finish promptly, 5 o'clock Singapore time. And thank you once again for joining us. So I'm going to hand over now to Russell and Annie and look forward to continuing our leadership journey together as we think about how we can really drive for results.
Thank you, Harriet. Lovely introduction. One of the favorite lenses that we have in Marketing Leaders Program is at your best versus just surviving. And it's the one that is so important to delivering more with and through other people. And we wanted to share this with you. So if it's your first time, as Harriet mentioned, fantastic. If it's your third in the series, also fantastic. This is one of those lenses, one of those tools that if you've participated in the program, you will remember runs through it. We think of it very much as the backbone of your marketing leadership. And it's all about mindset and behavior. And it's being about being at your best, high energy, versus being at your best, low energy, lower energy, and just surviving high energy and just surviving lower energy. So I'm going to show you the flip chart and we're going to invite you to think about, to reflect upon, what are you like when you're at your best high energy, and get some chat from you sharing in the chat box. And then we'll move round to thinking about what are you like at your best lower energy and the importance of that. I've got just picked up a book called Step Back, and it's all about finding time to step back in our busy days. But we want to start with high energy at your best. So this is top right, at your best, high energy, pop in the chat box, what are you like when your mindset is positive and your behavior is congruent with how you're thinking, how you're feeling? Often we're in touch with our values and our beliefs as well. High energy at your best.
So we've got confident, resilient, effective, motivating, hugely productive from Nick. Thank you. Passionate and driven. Thanks, Andrea. Lovely.
And what's it like to be around you? Again, just take a moment to reflect. Everything is possible. What's it like to be around you when you're at your best? What's your impact on others? High energy at your best. What's it like to be around you when you're at your best? Connecting, lovely, bringing, inspiring, giving energy. Absolutely, this is about that I, you, we. We're more connected with others. Our focus is outwards. We feel positive. Anything is possible. People want to be with us. They want to be part of what we're up to. And it's fun. Thank you. Really important, inspiring. So moving into at your best, lower energy, really important to think about this. As I mentioned, it's a different kind of stepping back. So we're still at our best, and some of us can find it quite difficult to be in this mindset and the behavior that goes with it. You know, we can just get caught up with being very, very busy, but it's so important for us as leaders to be able to step back, to reflect. And as Harriet said, these sessions in a way are about connecting and reflecting with your marketing leadership. So again, please share, what are you like when you're at your best but lower energy?
Thinking, thoughtful, considered. More considered. Calming, pragmatic, reflective. Less vocal, yeah, so there's maybe less chat going on, more reflective. Creating great ideas. Lovely. Thank you. Reflective, Julianne Douglas. So lots of reflection going on. Calm, yeah. Pragmatic.
Lovely.
Tackling the long-term challenges. So maybe taking a step back, seeing the bigger picture. Lovely, Govinda. Thank you. Future focused.
Yeah, it's lovely. So important to bring that mindset and the behavior that is quieter, lower energy, more reflective, introspective, but still connected, and connected to that future and making time for that. And again, just referencing the book Step Back, which I haven't read yet, but he talks about finding the cracks and crevices in our days where we can just step back and refuel and recharge. And I know particularly at this time in some of our coaching work, we're finding there are a lot of people who are really looking forward to stepping back. We don't always have the luxury of being able to step back, take a break, take a holiday. We may have to wait for that. So taking time to step back in the day to day and finding those cracks and crevices where you can make time for that lower, more reflective energy, but still very connected to yourself and others. So moving round into the just surviving mindset, what's it like and what are you like when you're in high energy, just surviving? What's your behavior like? How are you feeling? What are you thinking? What's this like? Just surviving, task oriented.
Crisis management.
Absolutely, very reactive, inefficient.
Quicker decisions sometimes. So I take that, Andrea, that sometimes you're putting things off perhaps, focused on the here and now, so you're maybe just doing what first comes to mind. You're very directive, so there's lots of telling going on, feeling pressured to get things done, no time to reflect, get things off your plate, yeah. So maybe you've got too much on, you just want to get it off your plate, you're pushing it onto others perhaps.
It's a much more reactive place. It's a place where it's much more, the focus is me, me, me. We're thinking less about others. It can be a more anxious place. And so some of us, and I would include myself in that, I become more controlling when I'm in just surviving high energy. So my behavior is more controlling and definitely more directive, less collaborative, more reactive, not really thinking about things, not thinking them through. It can be very exhausting What's it like to be around when we're in just surviving high energy? What's the impact on others? Again, just a few thoughts from you in the chat box. What's the impact? Stressful.
So others are feeling frustrated, they're demoralized, running around like headless chickens, Nick. Lovely, thank you. Anxious, we're making others feel anxious. Others are unfocused as well, perhaps because we're just getting things off our plate and giving things to others. It's not providing them the focus. Less collaboration going on, fighting fires.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And then moving to the lower energy, just surviving. Again, what are you like when you're in that lower energy, or what are people like when you're in that lower energy, just surviving? What's it feel like? Withdrawn.
Mm.
Yeah. Depressed. Very stressed. Yeah. Sapping of others' energy. It's a very, very tiring for oneself, but also to be around. And they're often fueled by anxiety. Yeah, we can feel that everything's happening around us. It's being done to us. And we're reacting to it and withdrawing from it. We're going to have a look at what are some of the things that trigger you. Most of the time, most of us are over here at our best, higher or lower energy, and moving between the two. But we get triggered sometimes, and it can be by a small thing, it can be by a big thing, something that clashes with our values, with our beliefs, that triggers us into just surviving. So again, what we'd love to do is to hear from you in the chat box. What are some of the things that trigger you from being at your best to just surviving? And perhaps particularly at this time, which is a more stressful, uncertain time for us to be leading through. What are you noticing about yourself, but also about other people? What are the kind of things that are triggering you and others from at your best to just surviving?
Sudden multiple priorities. Yeah, we hear a lot of that, Anurag. Thanks for sharing. There's just sudden requests with tight deadlines associated with them. Rapid workload increasing just triggers you from being at your best, where everything's going well, into that just surviving. Bad news, e.g. people leaving. Yeah, good people that that contribute. Getting distracted by office politics. Worried about your role versus doing your job. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Curveballs, Wendy. Yeah, thank you. Anything else you can think of that triggers you from that state where you're at your best, everything's going really well, and then something triggers you into just surviving? Anything else come to mind? Lack of sleep and exercise, personal issues. Yeah,
thanks everyone. Absolutely. And importantly, recognizing for yourself, what are some of the things that trigger you from at your best to just surviving, so that you can, and we often talk, it's like this, if you know what your triggers are, I'm holding up this pen here, if you know what your triggers are, you can, when they come, instead of them grabbing you and triggering you into that just surviving place, you have an element of choice. If we spot it, then we have more choice over it. And it's harder to have choice over it when we're tired, when we're exhausted. So again, making time to be at our best lower energy will help us spot with our triggers. What are some of the other things that either help keep you at your best, higher, lower energy, or help you switch back from just surviving higher or lower energy? What are some of the top tips, things that help you to stay at your best more of the time and help others to be their best, of course, and to deliver more and through with and each other? Yes. Fantastic.
So we've got good quarterly results, Anurag. Thank you. Yeah, always helps, doesn't it? Support of others, connecting and sharing. Exercise, that's come up. So exercise, lack of exercise, lack of sleep can be a trigger for some, and getting exercise can be something that can keep you in that place of being at your best. Yoga and mindfulness, we're hearing lots of that, especially during this time, where people are getting energy that helps them stay at their best through stretching, through mindful activities. Time away from work, time and with friends and family. Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Although we seem to have found time, we as human beings seem to fill it with stuff that occupies us. Great delegation. Yeah, bringing others with us. I'd add to that, Mark. Thank you. Work well with the team. Use the team perspective. Getting outside. Talking about it. Absolutely. Yeah. Being aligned with corporate strategic objectives and recognition. Lovely. Knowing you're doing a great job. Back to you, Annie.
Yeah, lovely. Making time for your team, making time for yourself, having a go-to person. We're going to be handing over to Maritz in a minute, but just as we come to the close of this part, just take a moment to jot down what is one thing that you're going to do that will help you to be at your best more of the time. Just one thing, maybe something that has inspired you from the shared chat, or something that you've just been reminded of, I need to do whatever it is, and that will help me be at my best more of the time and help others to be at their best and to deliver through and with others. Lovely. Thank you. Handing back to Harriet. Thanks, Harriet.
Thank you so much, Annie and Russell, for that. That's super helpful. And I always find when I'm doing these sessions with you both that it reminds me about all of the things that I'm either failing to do or could be doing better, as well as reminding me of some of the things that I'm doing okay. We had, I was reflecting, I had a leadership team meeting yesterday, and I was reflecting that we took the decision to close the Brand Learning office in Singapore on March the 20th, and we sent everybody home. I had no idea that I would never, ever see anybody ever again. We had a leadership team meeting, and I had two people in my home office, and it was just the loveliest experience. We just sat and chatted and chatted and chatted. It was such a treat. So really, a really, really lovely treat. So Maurice, thank you so much for agreeing to do a little bit of a chat with me, following Annie and Russell's input there. So to start off, obviously everybody in the Singapore marketing community knows you, but we have a global audience today. So could you tell us just a little bit about yourself? That would be super helpful.
Absolutely. Thank you, Harriet. So good morning, good afternoon, everybody. My name is Moritz. I work for Mars as the Vice President of Marketing for Asia-Pac. Been with Mars now for a good 10 years as a marketing director in Germany first. Probably can hear it. I'm from Germany originally. Now I'm based in Singapore. Then I worked in a global brand position in Brussels, in Belgium, and now I'm basically in Singapore looking after marketing in Asia-Pac. And since beginning of this year, I'm a member of this fantastic marketing society. So delighted to be here with you guys and having a chat with you and with Harriet.
Thank you. That's lovely to hear. And a very typical Singaporean marketing background in a properly global way. So first of all, let's just talk a little bit about that model that Annie shared with us and about being at our best versus just surviving. How have the last 2 or 3 months gone for you? Are you just surviving, or are you managing to be at your best, or a little bit of a mixture of the two?
I think it's a good mix, to be honest. So there's days when it feels just like surviving, and it's exactly what I've seen in the chat here as well, when things are just coming in left, right, and center, piling up. You have the feeling you're being driven versus driving something. And that's when I personally step back. And the beautiful thing of this home office setup is basically stepping back means I switch off. So I basically just switch off the laptop and go out for an hour. And in Singapore, it's always warm. Most of the times it doesn't rain, contrary to all the rumors. So I just walk. I go for a walk for an hour and then come back and switch it all on again. And that helps me a lot. So that's one of the things that I personally do when things get a little bit into that quadrant where I don't want to be. But I have to say, you know, while I hear quite a lot from people that these are very difficult times and that is very stressful, I haven't experienced them to be significantly more stressful than what I've experienced before. I think it's just a different way of working. And it's a question of how much can we embrace it and how much can we actually leverage it? And for this comes back to some basic human insights. I think the thing that I miss the most, as you've just said, Harriet, you know, having two people at your house, a bit of a social interaction makes all the difference these days. That's what I miss the most. And that's what everybody that works with me misses the most as well, because we don't have this moment at the coffee machine. We don't see each other for all the chit chats. And that's also part of work, because, I mean, let's not forget, we spend most of our wake hours at work. So again, I could actually sit here and just complain about that, but I can also do something about it. And that's what I've decided for myself to do. So I'll just consciously make the time to do, to have these chats. So I basically, it is virtual. Yes, it is not the same as having somebody in the room, but I have these chats. I sometimes just call people for a chat. And that's work people, and they do the same with me. They know they can call me anytime. And if it's a work call, we make conscious space for a chat. And I'm talking a non-work chat. Yes. So that's one of the things I could recommend to everybody, because you're missing out on what your peers and your colleagues are doing because you don't have the coffee machine chat. Just ask them. Ask them what have they done over the weekend. I guarantee you, they'll be delighted to talk about it. And the same that you get back, you can talk about your weekend as well. And I think that's part of what's missing in this new world at the moment, but it is something that you can consciously counterbalance.
It's a really important point that you're making, because actually sometimes we talk in the Marketing Leaders Program that in order to really deliver great results, they only come from relationships. And actually, yes, if we stop building those relationships, whether it's with our colleagues, whether our agencies, our bosses, our teams, all sorts of relationships, there's nothing to draw on to deliver the results that have become even more important for some people at the moment.
Agree.
Yeah.
And I see that particularly the company I work for. I mean, I'm not sure how many people know Mars, but Mars is a people company. So we're, all our success is built around people and relationships between people. And yet we're not failing during these times. So we have all become smart in the new ways of working and have started mastering them. And yes, I'm sure most people like myself are looking forward to a time when the offices open again and when I have the option to go back.
Yeah.
I'm not looking forward to being asked to be there every day again, because I have to say this way of working also has a lot of benefits, because it gives me more freedom in you know, how I want to run my day, for example.
So where does the discipline come from in you to force yourself in those bad moments? I thought it was lovely what you said about you feel like you're being driven rather than driving. Where does the discipline come from? So I'm just going to stop and walk away at just those times when you can really feel like everything's coming down on top of you.
For me, I'm a tummy person. So the moment I feel this quench in my tummy that it doesn't feel right, that's when I'm
actually, like, there's good biological science that underpins that stomach feeling. So yes.
It's a tummy feeling for me. So the moment it doesn't feel right, the moment I feel starting, you know, I start feeling stressed or something like that, I feel it in my tummy. And then sometimes it's just, you know, getting up, getting a glass of water, and that solves it. If it doesn't solve it, that's the sign for me. I need to get out and get some fresh air.
Yeah, absolutely. So in these, in the current context, has there been a shift at all in the role that you're seeing marketing playing across the organization to deliver for financial performance, or indeed to deliver for your consumers at all? I'm interested in whether the context for delivery and what's being asked of you, or indeed all the opportunities that you can see, whether that's shifting at all.
Yes, very clear, yes. And I think it's a shift, and it is it's mainly an acceleration. So obviously, you know, as many other big companies as well, data has become our new oil, and there's a lot to do in this space. I mean, we are a legacy marketing company and have a great record of doing so for decades, but we're not digitally insurgent. You know, we're not a digitally native company. That also means most of the people that work with me on my team, including myself, we're not digital natives. And we've started that journey basically on transforming ourselves towards becoming more of a digitalized company. That journey, we obviously didn't plan that journey to be accelerated at the speed it is being accelerated now. But I have to say, it's great. It feels like in the beginning it was a bit scary, but now it feels like a very healthy acceleration, because now that I'm seeing what we can do in months that we actually had originally laid out for years, wow. I have to say, there's quite a big benefit in having
to. It's exciting, yes. Yeah, the possibilities for innovation are much greater than they were before. Yeah,
absolutely. And I think that it actually brings out some really interesting opportunities and behavioral opportunities as well, because we become more risk-taking. We're not a very risk-taking company, but we become more risk-taking because we just have this massive pressure to act and change a lot faster than before.
Yes.
And at the same time, we're willing to delegate risk a lot more. So I see some behavior changes on not everything having to go through the chain of command, but people just basically saying, you take the decision.
Which is exciting, isn't it? And actually, to that point, there's a great question in the chat from Andrea De Vicentis from HSBC. And Andrea, it's lovely to have you with us. So he's asking a question about whether your relationships have changed with your agency partners through this. And he's got an observation that he's finding that actually he and his colleagues are speeding up their conversations and their decision making and moving through to execution faster, rather than having those big agency client meetings in the agency rooms with lots of coffee and biscuits and pontification. And he goes, sorry, Andrea, I slightly embellished what you said. But Moritz, I'm interested in how, you know, I think it's a great point that Andrea's making is how it works externally in some of those relationships, which traditionally were very face-to-face heavy. Yeah,
that's true. No, I see the very same for us. And I have to say that there's always a little bit of a cautious eye or a bit of a cautious side here as well, because while I think that it has become a lot more efficient in the sense of what you've just shared, you know, we don't have these big meetings that are all these horse and pony shows. We basically get down to business immediately. And I think that in many cases that works and is very efficient. But I think the watch out is we need to make sure that we still appreciate the work that is being done, because while it might sound for us as a client, I'm talking as a client now, feel like a bit of a horse and pony show. I mean, there have been the brightest creative minds have been on this work for a long time before we see it. And it is also an appreciation of that work. And they want to share that work in the environment and in the celebration that it deserves. And that's something that at the moment falls a bit short, I have to say. So I think while this is okay for some time, we need to consciously create some space again, because otherwise I have the fear that, especially when it comes to the creative crowds, that they will start feeling underappreciated, which nobody wants, because we all depend on their creative minds and their excellence.
It's such an important point. I mean, it goes back to your point earlier on, doesn't it, about building relationships, and actually some of that chit chat actually builds that recognition and that relationship. And I've certainly noticed some of the relationships that we have with clients or that I have with my team, if I'm not careful, it gets a bit transactional.
Yes,
terribly efficient.
I was avoiding to use. Yeah.
And in fact, funnily enough, I had a discussion with a client last night, and there was lots of, you know, fairly heavy feedback going backwards and forwards. And then one of the people from the client team said, can I just say thank you to you all for all the hard work you're doing? And it makes all the difference. And having sat in your shoes as well as now in my shoes on both sides of the fence, a thank you and a little bit of recognition goes a very long way. I agree with you. Yeah. Just thinking a little bit about your global career, Moritz, so I'm interested in your perspectives about life as a marketing leader and focusing on delivery and what feels different in Singapore versus Europe, because we have this endless question, don't we, about different leadership challenges, about East versus West, or not East versus West, but just East and West. And of course, the realities of being in a regional role in a global MNC, which is always a slightly fractious position if one's not careful. So tell me a little bit about what that feels like for you.
Absolutely. I mean, it was and is a great learning journey, because obviously here I sit as a European kid, having done most of my jobs out of Europe so far. And now I'm sitting in Asia and looking after an area that is not my home, and where obviously many of the things that are common norms here and cultural norms, I don't know. So I think for me, one of the key things and a key enabler is I don't pretend to know. I'm here to learn and to listen. So that's why, that's how I started when I came on the job 3 years ago. And I'm still learning and listening. So because the people that are here on the ground, they know their business best. They know their consumers best. And who would I be to come with a preset mind with a recommendation? I see my role as you know, opening doors, creating the environment for them to succeed, and they are still making the ultimate decisions on how to succeed. So I'm more here on trying to help them, trying to support them, and basically making that very clear to everybody that I'm not the guy who comes with all the wisdom. And the funny thing is, while in Europe, people get a bit upset when you come with preset wisdom and you actually get a bit of pushback, they would actually like to get a bit of preset wisdom here. Many of the local teams here in the Asian markets, they're actually asking me, before they share anything with me, they ask me, what would you do?
Yes, what's the answer? Yes.
Exactly. What's the answer? I don't know. Most likely it is in your head. So let's work together, and then I can tell you what I've seen and what it has triggered with me. But I don't have a preset answer, so I don't know. And I think the other bit that often gets asked when I speak to my colleagues back in Europe, because there's obviously this myth and there's some truth in it, that it is very difficult to get participation out of an Eastern crowd or of an Asian crowd mainly. And there is some truth in it. So there's certainly when you run a workshop with lots of Americans on the call, I mean, there's, you don't even need to invite people to speak up. You know, you actually have to ask
people. I'll get them to shut up, yes.
To shut up at some point, because, you know, you want to get some messages in. In Asia, it's a bit different. So there is more of a receptive approach in the beginning. So there's even more need of building trust and building a safe space, because there's a lot of elements here around being a bit insecure around what they can, they ask that question, how are they being seen if they ask that question. So really trying to create that safe space and reiterating countless times that everybody should be asking anything they have on their mind, making that space. I sometimes use technology now in these days, which is anonymous, which helps a lot. So I use SurveyMonkey where people can ask questions without me knowing who's asked them. And funny enough, then the questions actually start popping in. And then, I mean, obviously the last bit is you can in the calls also call out individual people. And I sometimes do that as well, but I do normally pick the ones that I know are a little bit more comfortable with called out, because I don't want anybody to feel stressed by anything we're doing. Right. As I said, I mean, I think the fundamental thing is, you know, creating that safe space, that safe and fun space, because work should be fun after all. And that's the bit where if people feel that this is a fun and probably a lighthearted conversation that is still about business, it doesn't need to always be serious and sad. It can also be fun and lighthearted. Then people open up a bit more. And I think that is probably valid across the world.
Lovely. Thank you very much. So in a minute, I'm going to ask Russell and Annie to come back and join us some more. And please feel free to ask anybody any questions. But just as a segue into that, there's a lovely question from Anurag. And Anurag, it's lovely to have you with us as well. So obviously, none of us know what the future of marketing is going to look like. And it's sort of on everybody. It's long been on everybody's lips because this is a rapidly changing industry and function, certainly compared to when I started my career a little while back. But really interested in from your perspective about beyond simply going digital, what are you starting to anticipate and what are you starting to see at Mars that you think the future of marketing might look like?
Yeah. So I think from my point of view, the future of marketing in very simple terms is we have to stop talking at consumers and start interacting and engaging with consumers. And that, in my point of view, is the future of marketing, that we're not trying to market something at them or to them, but that we become, and I sometimes use the word friend, it's probably not the right word, that we become their trusted friend that they can rely upon for advice, for even if it's product advice as well, but that we start moving towards what we call mutual value experiences. So I'm asking for a little bit of data. In return, I'll offer you a service that is, you know, a lot better than if I wouldn't have that data. So I know you better. So there's this element about show me that you know me, but don't know me too much. And I think this is where this journey is going. It's going to be about mutual value experiences. You know, show me that you know me and offer me a service that's relevant to me. And, you know, and if I have a question, be there for me to answer that question. So that obviously sounds very simple, but has a huge impact on how we do marketing, because it changes organizational setups, it changes, you know, our agency relationships, it literally changes everything and it challenges quite a few things. And it means that we need to keep ourselves upskilled, because I'm sitting here, you know, doing marketing since 20 years. What I've learned 20 years ago is very different from what we need to do now and what we need to do in 3 or 5 years. So staying curious and always keen on upskilling ourselves, I think is a key, particularly in marketing, because I'm not sure I have ever seen another function changing as rapidly as marketing.
I think that concept of mutual value exchange is really interesting. And this idea that used to be very simple, a consumer gave you money and you gave them a product. But actually that concept that the value could be beyond money and that actually data can be part of that value exchange and that value proposition. Obviously, if you look, there are I guess there are, in, you know, frequent flyer programs, for example, have long operated on that. Give me some data and I'll give you some miles. But actually seeing that really flowing through into sectors like CPG is really exciting and interesting. As you say, very, very challenging. So Russell and Annie, why don't you guys join us? And then, well, first of all, it gives you an opportunity to ask Moritz anything that you want to as well. But also, if there's anybody on the chat that's got any questions or indeed any comments, anything you want to add to any of the points that that Moritz has been making, you're very, very welcome. But why don't we kick off that? I know, Russell, you're going to have a question you want to ask Moritz, because you always do. So why don't you kick off, and that will give people some time to think as well.
Too well, Harriet. Lovely. Thank you, Moritz. Really, really interesting, insightful. I loved how you talked about how you build trust and safety amongst your people, and you're trying to bring fun to this environment, which is a tough thing, actually. And I've got a double-headed question, actually, because what we're finding with our clients is the difficulty in bringing people with them and having that sense of fun and lightness that you talked about when people are feeling worried and anxious. I'm really curious to understand, how do you lean into that? How do you deal with that?
Yep. It's a very good point. So obviously it makes it a lot more difficult if you have people that are potentially worrying about their jobs. So we've been a bit spoiled in that sense that, you know, business is doing well through this crisis for us. So we didn't have that many challenges in that space. But overall, I think it comes back to appreciating the situation that people are in. So it is not fun at the expense of ridiculing anybody. It is something that I jointly agree with the team. You know, when we set out how we run a call, for example. So I always have a proposal that we start with a few fun facts. Often we basically share one fact that you didn't know about somebody and you have to associate it to a person. And that can be quite funny because people often get that wrong. And for whatever reason, always the slightly outrageous one, they think it was me when I always have the most boring ones. But having a couple of those lighthearted moments where people share a little bit and share things that are non-work related that are actually a bit of fun, but having a conversation before whether they're okay with that. So obviously if I have anybody that, and if I know that there's people on the call that are potentially worrying about their roles or their jobs or have something on their mind because there's problems with the family or so, then I have a chat with them before the call. So that's where I try to stay very close to everybody that I work with. And as I said earlier, I spent that extra time on engaging with everybody. And I have the feeling actually with my direct team and even with my dotted line reports, I actually have more interactions at the moment than I had before. Because I want to have spoken to everybody, and it doesn't need to be business talk, once a week minimum. And I don't think I have had that that cadence before. Probably with my direct reports that were sitting in the same office, yes, but I have direct reports sitting all over Asia. And probably there was a week when I didn't speak to them. So that's where I'm trying to make that a habit. And everybody knows that I personally have that need. I've shared that. And so far, people have been quite willing to do that. So that's definitely one of the things where I try to know what mind space people are in, and then as much as I can, I try to accommodate for that.
Mm. That's lovely, Moritz. Ages ago, I read an article about going from good to great leadership, outstanding leadership, and the number one of the top five things was a passionate curiosity, not just in anything, but in people. And, from everything you've said, you absolutely lead with that. In terms of relationship, knowing where your people are at, and also something which you said, I wasn't quite sure where you were going with it when you said, "I feel it in my tummy." I thought, "What? I wonder where this is going." But that was a lovely kind of what you're noticing about yourself, and not just noticing it, but paying attention to it as well. So that real leading by example, being curious in yourself and seeing what you need to do, which I think is absolutely lovely and so important if we are to deliver with and through others in the way that you do.
Yeah, agree.
So there's a couple of Sorry, Mark, so I'm just going to jump in because there's a couple of other questions in from the chat, and we'll come back to that, I'm sure, but I want to make sure that that our participants have a chance, because otherwise we'll just talk to you all day quite happily. So Wendy, lovely to have you with us. Thank you very much. So Wendy's asked, how closely do you work with your sellers to understand what value looks like to your customers? And how do you make sure that they also sell with that mutual value exchange in mind? So how does that consumer value exchange really get understood and delivered right across the function? So right across marketing and sales.
That's a very, very fair question. And that's one of the questions that, that we're at the moment tackling as well, because we have realized that it is a journey that, that we're taking the organization on, and we haven't yet gotten everybody on the bus. So that's definitely an area that we're still working on, and it's going to take us some time, because as I said, that journey was planned for a much longer time frame. It got massively accelerated, and we are looking back a little bit now and say, okay, what are the things that we might have missed on that acceleration? And that's one of the things that we've actually just had a conversation yesterday about. So who are people where we feel we haven't gotten them on the bus entirely yet? So that basically, you know, the concept might be great on paper, and a large part of the stakeholders would understand and embrace it, but there's still a significant part that hasn't come on the bus yet. And we're now basically stepping back a little bit and decelerating and making sure that we're not missing anybody. So we've done this check-in just yesterday, and we've actually realized it's not just in sales where we've missed a few people, and actually a few key people. We also have realized that when it comes to managing up, we've actually, in our senior leader group, we have missed people there as well. And that's quite tricky, because there was one insight yesterday, which was like, okay, some of the people that sit on the money don't know what we're talking about.
And that's not unusual. That's not unusual, Moritz. Yeah.
But that's a tricky one when you're asking for more money for things that you haven't talked about before. I mean, obviously, if you ask for media money, nobody has any question, because you can show them an ROI. But if you know, certainly, if you go into dynamic creative optimization, for example, something, and you want money for that, incremental money to what's in the plans already, and people don't understand it, they're very unlikely to release that money. So we have a job to do in all directions still on making sure that everybody's on the bus, because it is a bit quicker than we had planned it.
So do keep your questions coming in for Russell or Annie as well. But there's a question in from Nick Elias. And Nick, I'm not lovely to have you with us. I don't know whether you're client or agency side, and I'm flagging that, Moritz, in advance of telling you what the question is, because the question is, beyond recognition, how else do you think, what else contributes to building great agency relationships? So remember, he might be your agency.
Yeah, that's absolutely fine. I'll say the very thing that I say, you know, when I'm with our agency partners in the room. For me, the torture test is if we have and I take the old physical world, if we have a meeting as, you know, client agency, and, you know, Harriet would walk in and basically observes us for 10 minutes. And then I'll ask her after 10 minutes, tell me who is agency and who is client here. And if she is not able to tell, that is the way it should work. Mm-hmm. If she can, then we have a better job to do. Because for us, it is about a true collaboration and a trusted partnership. We share everything with our agencies and expect the sharing back in return. That doesn't mean we hug each other all the time. We can also have some very tough conversations with each other, but it is about this joint agenda. We own this business together. We own these brands together, and everybody needs to understand that. And I think it works brilliantly with our strategic agency partners, and you genuinely are not able to tell who works for Mars and who works for BBDO or DDB, for example, if you walk into one of our normal day-to-day meetings when I'm talking a physical space.
And how do you get there, Moritz? Because it's a lovely picture that you portrayed for us, but what are some of the enablers that contribute to making that happen?
So there's, I think there's an element of around roles and responsibilities, being very clear who does what, so that we're not doing the same things. Then there's this other element around being really transparent with each other and share and have lots of time with each other. There is some elements in the past of co-location. So people sitting in our offices, we're using agency offices. And then, you know, there's also a big element around jointly owning these agendas. So everybody has a seat at the table and is expected to contribute, but has the right to contribute as well. So everybody has a veto right. If an agency partner is not in line with what we want to do on the brand, they can raise their hand and we won't be doing it. Same on our side. If we don't like a proposal, we can raise our hand. And I think that joint skin in the game, obviously there's a big remuneration part around that as well, that we have joint skin in the game. So our agencies benefit if we do well. And I think that's also a question of mutuality. If we do well through the work that they deliver for us and with us, they should be doing well as well. So there's a remuneration part as well. But I think there's ultimately a part that often gets forgotten, and that's for me the celebration part. I think, you know, and that's sometimes where we fall short a little bit as well in this hectic time, in this hectic world. If things work well that we've created together, let's celebrate them together. And I think that applies not just to agency relationships, but to every relationship, team relationships. Take time to celebrate, take time to look back, and take time to also understand what has worked particularly well, and then let's do more of that.
It's a great point, isn't it? And I think particularly when we're all so dispersed, the ability just to go out for a drink and have a picture and celebrate is obviously not there. So we actually need to work more creatively to really kind of drive that. I'm interested in, Moritz, about some of the things that we've been talking today. To what degree do you think they are specifically important for marketing leaders? Because here we are with a great audience of marketeers. Do you think this is different for us in marketing, or do you think some of these challenges are the same for your finance and HR and sales colleagues around the organization?
I'm sure some of the challenges are similar or the same. I mean, they have the same connectivity challenges or opportunities as we have. I think for marketing, there is this rapid change that comes in addition to the change in ways of working, because the change in ways of working is pretty much the same across departments. But the change in the environment around us, that's pretty unique to marketing. And I think that also, you know, it gives us opportunities and challenges at the same time. And that's why we need to be extra agile in marketing. I mean, who would have thought TikTok is today what it is a year ago? So I mean, there's platforms emerging and disappearing in China on a daily basis, for example. So that's the bit where I think that's quite unique. While there's change in sales as well, retailers come, retailers go, but not at that speed and not with that impact. So I think the marketing function is particularly challenged, and obviously I'm a marketer, I love marketing, and I think we are the brightest minds in the world. But I think we're also, you know, well set up for that, because a marketer has always had to have and has to have a pretty generalistic view on the total business. You need to understand everything from what your consumer wants all the way through the financials of your products, the cost structure. So it's a pretty broad set of KPIs and variables you need to be on top of. So I think we're actually very well suited to challenge or to master these challenges that lie ahead of us.
Yeah, and I think, so I agree, not that I'm biased, but I think that agenda about really being obsessed and starting with the consumer and the customer is for yes. many marketing leaders what propels that energy, and it's what gives that vision and that desire to engage, and indeed that desire to really drive and deliver for results. And you know, certainly from my own career, I can still remember there are times when I've heard a consumer saying something to me, or I've read something, and it's sat in the bottom of my tummy, but in a good way, and it's made me want to drive change to enable an outcome for that consumer, and to really Absolutely. Shift it in a fundamentally or different way.
Absolutely. Great.
Quick question for me. I'm really interested in your reflections on working from home and what people are talking about as the new normal. And there's a lot of chat at the moment as different parts of the world look to transition back to physical spaces. And I'm reminded by what Sil Sala said last night on the Brave Awards, the Marketing Society Brave Awards that we had last night. And she said, let's create a better normal. And I just thought, what a wonderful challenge to us as a marketing community, to society at large. And I'm wondering, in your mind, because you mentioned that, you know, there are things about working from home that you like and things about the office that you like. I'm wondering, what could that better normal, as we can look to transition back to physical spaces, look like for you?
Yeah. So for me, the better normal would be an optional office setup. So that means, you know, I probably go 2 days a week if I'm not traveling to the office, and work 3 days from home. because there are days when there's probably a big team meeting that does require some on-site attendance when I would go, and the other days I would love to have the choice to work from home. Mm. And I'm very spoiled with working for Mars because Mars is and has been flexible in this space way before this whole Corona crisis already, and I have been in roles where I had a huge home working share for the last 6 years. So I'm kind of seasoned when it comes to working from home. So the negative aspects of what some people feel when they're getting into this, I've gone through that quite some time ago and I've gotten used to that. So I'm more focused on the positive aspects. I enjoy the freedom that it gives me when I have to run a quick errand or do something like that. I can do it. I plan my meetings around it. But I miss the part of being able to go back to the office occasionally for some interactions, because I think some interactions, especially team sessions, high performance collaboration sessions and stuff like that, is still better done face to face. Not everything is great done virtually, and so I think the better normal for me would be a world where I have the choice to go to the office, and I'm happy to have a certain percentage as a mandate, probably 2 days a week or 3 days a week. But I also want to have the choice to work from home, because there's certain things that I can do much better from home when I need a bit of thinking time. And because we work in an open space environment in Mars, so it is a bit difficult to do, some proper thinking tasks, because there's people interrupting you all the time.
So I know that we have some property developers on the call, so we'll be listening with ears wide open to what you're saying, Maurice. Yeah. So thank you for that. So we've only got a couple more minutes. So first of all, thank all of you for participating and pitching up today. I know that everyone's schedules are incredibly busy. So thank you for joining us. And I really hope that it was useful for you. Obviously, big thanks yet again to Russell and Annie for sharing your wisdom with us. We wouldn't be here without you and hugely appreciate it. And Moritz, thank you so much for being so open, actually, about the challenges that you're facing and actually what fun you are having leading through this. And I've learned a few tips from you. So from a personal
perspective, I'm
very grateful. So a couple of announcements from me. If you've enjoyed today, if you found it useful, it's really just to give you a little bit of a flavor of the Marketing Leaders Program that the Marketing Society runs in conjunction with Brand Learning. We're going virtual. We've run the program for the last 15 years in Singapore, New York, and London. It's now going global and it's going virtual. It's a wonderful opportunity to have more conversations like this and listen to great leaders like Moritz, learn from wonderful leadership gurus like Russell and Annie, but also importantly for you personally to go on a leadership journey and get really, really good personal coaching from people like Russell and Annie, but actually also from your peers and from marketing leaders. So watch out for the information about that. It's a phenomenal program. I can't recommend it highly enough. There's a poll about to come up. I'm hoping somebody from the Society, there we go, there's a poll. So please fill in the poll. And please do remember that the Society is about building a network of brave leaders. So do stay connected, reach out to each other on LinkedIn, have a coffee if you're allowed, and stay in touch. And thank you so much, and have a lovely weekend. For those of you who aren't in Singapore, you may not know, but we have a public holiday tomorrow because it's Hari Raya, and I'm so excited to have 3 days off. So take care, stay well, and enjoy the sunshine. All the very best. Bye-bye.